There you go, you're ready.
Okay. This session of the DDD District West Independent Oversight Committee is now called to order. It is the first Wednesday of the month, which is our typical meeting time. It is 6:01 PM on March 5th, 2025. Do we have anyone who has to disclose a conflict of interest? And if there is, we'll need the committee member to disclose why on the record. Anybody have a conflict of interest given our agenda? Okay. We're going to go ahead and we are going to introduce ourselves. I'm Deidre Friedman. Until you guys decide one of you wants to be the chair, I'm the chair. My son Andy was a DDD All-Tax Mercy Care member from 2003 until his death in 2021. In my past life, I'm a retired attorney from New York, and I am currently the chief compliance officer for a Norris Group, an Arizona healthcare business consulting firm, although we have clients nationwide. So let's see who's next on my list. Crystal, would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Sure. I am Crystal. I represent the Independent Oversight Committee on the Program Review Committee. I also have a, I'm a psychiatric nurse, retired from the Arizona State Hospital after 30 years. I still work in the field. I have a special needs daughter who's humming in the background. That is Tia. She's 22. She's been in the system since she was two. And I also support a member in the community who has a developmental disability that's, I don't know what you call it. He doesn't qualify for Altex or Access or anything. So he's just on, like, I don't know, I would almost consider it like a navigator status where he gets seen every 6 months or something like that. So, and then did I miss anything? I'm also an Arizona Mad Mom, which supports the most seriously mentally ill. So I'm down at the Capitol all the time. And I kind of cue in on, sometimes I speak on DDD things that I didn't know were coming up, but feel like I have something to say. So.
Hey, Cynthia.
Hi, Cynthia McCluskey. My son was in the system for many years. He no longer is. He is a productive taxpayer, amazingly. And I am on the board of Autism Society. I just stepped down as the board president after many years. I'm also a licensed insurance broker, and I help people navigate their healthcare. I serve on a variety of other nonprofits, and yep, that's who I am. Happy to be here. Thanks.
Jamie?
Hi, everyone. My name is Jamie Moore. I am adjunct faculty at Grand Canyon University, my specialty in literacy. I'm also the associate director for a group home in the West Valley, and I'm a private tutor, and I go home to home specializing in teaching students with profound dyslexia to read. And I also am a guardian of a young man that is 31 years old in the DDD system.
Pam?
Hi, good evening, everyone. Pam Dewey. I'm a registered nurse, retired from the Dignity Health System after 37 years. I have a grandson who's a DDD All-Tex Mercy Care member with autism. He's 6 years old and making some remarkable gains. We're really thrilled with that. I do some work, consulting work right now with Honor Health and doing research contracts for clinical trials with them. So that's keeping me busy, but glad to be here.
Okay, Michelle, you want to do the DDD introductions and our health plan introductions to make sure that we get everybody, please?
Yeah, sure. Not a problem at all. Okay, let's see. Angie, would you start us off pretty please?
I'd be happy to. Good evening, everyone. My name is Angie Venny, and I am the CARES Bureau Chief within DDD.
Thank you. And Barb? Sorry, you're on mute, or we can't hear you. No, you might be double muted. So star six, I believe.
I'll go while we can wait for her. Okay. I'm Megan Akins. I'm the housing supervisor for the CARES Affordable Housing Unit. And she says, come back to me.
Will do. Will do. Technical difficulty happens to all of us. Thank you, Megan. How about Christina?
Good evening, everyone. Thanks for telling me that it was evening, Angie, because I already messed that up once today. So I'm Christina Hedges. I am the Division's Office of Individual and Family Affairs Administrator. Thanks for having me here tonight.
And Michelle, can you hear me now?
Yes.
You know, I connect my phone so you all could hear me. And for some reason, that's not working for me today. That's the second time that happened. Anyway, my name is Barb Piconi, and I'm a program administrator here in CARES. And I support our DDD affordable housing team, amongst other teams. And I'm here, though, today because we are presenting to you all. So happy to be here.
Thank you, Barb. And Diane?
Yes. Hi, good evening. Diane Kress. I am the Quality Assurance Manager for District West.
Thank you. Joan?
Good evening, everybody. I'm Joan McQuaid. I'm a manager with the CARES Administration, and I'm here supporting Michelle and Morgan.
Thanks. Morgan?
Yes, good evening. I'm Morgan O'Hara, DDD's Independent Oversight Committee Liaison for District Central, East, and North.
Larry?
Good evening. Larry Allen with the Arizona Department of Administration. I am the IOC State Liaison.
Dawn?
Hi, everybody. Dawn McReynolds with United Healthcare, OIFA.
Wendy?
Hey there, Wendy Herring with Mercy Care, OIFA.
Frederica, I know sometimes your mic doesn't work.
Let's see. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yay. All right. This is Frederica Graham, the IOC liaison with Access.
Thank you. My name is Michelle Rademacher. I'm a DDD IOC liaison with the CARES Administration. And we do have some guests. You don't have to, but if you'd like to, you could introduce yourself at this time.
Hi, my name's Nicole Palomino, and I'm a DDD specialty manager for the CARES Administration. And I support Megan with housing. I support the Justice Region liaisons. And I'm also the person that coordinates the social work interns. And I actually brought one of my interns with me today. Her name's Brenda. And she's graduating in May.
Thank you, Nicole. Sorry, I missed you there. A lot of little tiles in front of me. Anybody else? Okay, you're good to go, Dee. Sorry, you're muted.
I'm muted. We're going to do the call to the public, and we have a unique situation here that Larry, Michelle, and I think came up with a solution. that works for the individual who has a disability, and so they need reasonable accommodations. They said that they can't speak publicly because of the disability. So they sent a note or an email, letter, whatever, and Michelle's going to read it on their behalf. So this is now our time for the call to the public. It's the time for the public to comment. Members of the committee may not discuss items that are specifically identified, that are not specifically identified on the agenda. Public comments are limited to 3 minutes per person. I just want to remind IOC members that if this is an issue that you would like put on future agendas, let us know and we'll be happy to do so. But especially because of our HIPAA obligations, if there is any personally identifiable information and what Michelle is about to read, that's one of the major reasons that we can't comment on anything. The other is the Arizona open meeting law, because the public does not have notice of what this issue is because it's not on our agenda. So Michelle, I'm going to turn it over to you to do the reasonable accommodation for this individual. Thank you.
Okay, and I'm going to go ahead and present as well, so that anyone that would like to can read along with it. As soon as I find it, there we go.
Just okay. Michelle, before you read it, I just want to remind everybody, because we're in an open meeting and because there's a recording being made and a transcript being made, this becomes part of that official record, which is why, besides the need for the accommodation, we're doing it this way, just so everybody understands.
Okay. Dear Independent Committee for Arizona Developmental Disabilities, I am writing to bring to your urgent attention the widespread discrimination my disabled child is facing due to systematic failures within the Arizona healthcare cost containment system, ACCESS, and the Developmental Disabilities, the Division of Developmental Disabilities, DDD. My son, who has cerebral palsy, autism and genetic disorder, ADHD and oppositional defiance disorder, ODD, has been denied essential services by businesses contracted through these agencies solely due to his diapering needs and behavioral challenges. This is not just about my child. It is a widespread problem affecting countless Arizona families. Providers contracted under ACCESS and DDD are refusing services to children with high medical and behavioral needs, and the agencies responsible for oversight are failing to hold them accountable. Despite my repeated complaints, I have been redirected back to the very agencies that have ignored the issue, leaving my child without the critical support he is entitled to under federal and state law. Violations of disability rights and Medicaid protections. These discriminatory practices violate multiple laws, including 1, Americans with Disability Act, ADA, Title II and III, prohibits disability-based discrimination in public services and private businesses that serve the public. 2, Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, prohibits federally funded programs from discriminating against individuals with disabilities. 3, Medicaid Act 42 USC 1396A mandates states to provide services without discrimination. Olmstead versus LC 527 US 581 1999 requires states to ensure individuals with disabilities receive services in the least restrictive environment. Despite these clear legal protections, Arizona's Medicaid system continues to allow providers to discriminate against children with high medical needs by setting arbitrary limitations, such as refusing to serve children who require diapering or behavioral interventions. This is a systemic issue that requires legislative action. Request for legislative action. I urge you to take immediate steps to 1. Investigate access and DDD's failure to enforce ADA and Medicaid compliance among their contracted providers. 2. Introduce or support legislation that prohibits access DDD funded providers from denying services based on medical needs such as diapering or behavioral support. 3. Mandate stronger oversight and accountability measures for contractors who discriminate against individuals with disabilities. 4. Require access and DDD to establish and enforce clear policies preventing providers from refusing children based on their disabilities. Arizona's families should not have to fight this hard to access basic services for their children. The current system is failing the most vulnerable individuals in our state, and without legislative intervention, this discrimination will continue unchecked. I respectfully request a meeting with you and your staff to discuss this issue further and explore legislative solutions. Please let me know how your office plans to address this critical issue. I appreciate your time and look forward to your response.
So, Michelle, the individual at this time refused to identify themselves.
I'm sorry, what?
The individual refused to identify themselves on the record. Is that correct?
I'm not clear if I should read the name or not.
Larry, what do we do?
She didn't disclose it in the letter, so I would not put her name on the record.
She didn't disclose it? Okay. And it's okay. It's okay that it's not disclosed on the record.
Yes.
I just want to make sure we're following the open meeting law. That's all I care about, Larry.
Yeah, I think we're fine. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, I want to make sure we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. Is there anyone else at this time during the call to the public who would like to go on the record? Okay, I'm not seeing anybody. So at this point, we can continue on with our agenda. And Michelle, what's our first agenda item?
We have DDD's Megan Akins here for the housing presentation.
Okay, Megan, the floor is yours. Thank you.
I was on mute, but I'm not now, right? Okay. I'm Megan Akins. I'm the affordable housing supervisor for DDD, and we have a couple of slides to go with you through with you today to talk about what is available to members through our office. So we are part of the CARES unit under Angie, Barb, and Nicole. The affordable housing unit resides. And we are going to talk a little bit about why affordable housing is needed in the current state of affairs in Arizona, what we do in our unit, and then opportunities we have. And there were some specific questions about data, so I put some additional slides in my standard deck for you. So this is the out of reach report, and it's put out annually by the National Low Income Housing Coalition. And it ranked Arizona number 14 out of all of the states. It basically tells you how many hours you would have to work a minimum wage job to afford a one bedroom house, to rent a one bedroom house. And currently that number is 76 hours of $14.35 an hour. And this report is the most recent report. It was done in 2024. And then it talks about to be able to afford that, what that same bedroom, to rent that same bedroom house, what would you have to make per hour working a normal work week? And that's $32.70. So that kind of shows you how unaffordable rent has gotten in our area. And there's some more numbers in there. But the minimum wage is $14.35. As of the time of this report, the average renter wage is $22.87, and the two bedroom household wage is $32.70. So that tells you that rent is not very affordable. And what's been determined affordable for folks that are receiving SSI is $283. So affordability is based on 30% of your income towards your household expenses. And so 283, obviously we're not going to be able to find a one or a two bedroom for 283. So the programs that our unit has, they're designed and the subsidies are there to bridge the gap between that $1,400 rental payment and the $283 that members can afford. So members will pay that 30% of their income towards rent, and some of our units even come with utility allowances that give them a little bit more money credit back towards their rent. But it will make it so that it's affordable for members to live in the community on their own. So our unit manages the wait lists and the mailboxes for DDD affordable housing. We act as referral agents and points of contact for properties and partners. We train support coordinators, and I know Pam, you had asked about how accessible the training is to support coordinators and how often. We require it for every 2 years to support coordination, and we provide it quarterly. So they log in through our online training system to access that training. And we've trained over 1,000 support coordinators and supervisors since our program began in 2017. We track and report data to access the ADOH and HUD, and we provide resources to SDs and families in need of housing help. The current affordable housing partnerships that we have in our office are the 811 Project Rental Assistance Grant. These are two $3 million grants, and they are partnerships with the Arizona Department of Health Services, ACCESS, the Arizona Department of Housing, and HUD. We also, in preparation for our grants, made a partnership with Kofelt Lamoureux Apartment Homes and Gorman and Company. And this was kind of our test run to see how the 811 program was gonna go. Kofelt Lamoureux is on 19th Avenue in Buckeye, downtown Phoenix, right down by the Capitol. And we have 30 units there. Then we also have mainstream vouchers with the Housing Authority of Maricopa County and the City of Tucson. And then we also have non-elderly disabled vouchers with the City of Tucson. So for each of these opportunities, the members pay 30% of their total household income towards rent, and each opportunity provides preference for our members, which means we skipped the public wait list. So as you can imagine, that's a really great thing because we're referring members directly to units and directly to vouchers when they're available. A lot of times how it works is members or just anybody in the public applies to a housing authority for a voucher, but they can only apply when that voucher waiting list is open, and they aren't open very often. So that is also something that our office tracks. And when housing authorities open their wait list, we send out an email to support coordination saying, oh, I'm sorry, Dee, I didn't see your hand raised.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that I heard what I thought I heard. You said with sure. The City of Tucson, you have an agreement regarding non-disabled individuals? Did I mishear that?
Yeah, they're non-elderly disabled. And the reason is, it's called a NED voucher. And the reason is because once a person hits 62, HUD has a different funding bucket that they pull from. So the voucher is available for people who can sign a lease, so 18 to 62.
Okay. What if we have a member who's residing with a family member or a caregiver who is 63 or older? Can you assist them in getting housing if they qualify for one of these affordable housing vouchers?
For all of these things on this screen, mm-hmm. they have to be between the ages of 18 and 62. And I'll get into the eligibility in a little bit, but there's different housing resources. There's a housing search through HUD. And then we have two properties that we partner with right now that are actually like senior properties through the 811 program. So to qualify, they would still have to be between 18 and 62, but it's just an example of there's whole entire properties that are dedicated to that population as well.
But you're over 62. My question is, what happens when someone within the house is over the age of 62?
I'm sorry. If somebody is, it's okay for somebody in the household to be over the age of 62, but the household, the head of household, the member has to be between 18 and 62.
Okay.
Okay.
For you to assist them.
To be eligible for the program. For the programs on the screen, for them to be eligible, they have to be the member and the head of household has to be between the ages of 18 and 62 to go through any of these application processes.
My question is, what if you have a member who's under 62, but if you have someone living in their household with them who is over 62, do you assist them? Can you assist them with these senior programs or no? Can you only assist the member?
If they're eligible to live in the unit with the member as the head of household. Does that make sense?
No.
I'm not answering it right. Okay. We're having a communication barrier here. So
let me try.
You're my mom. Okay, go ahead.
So I think what Dee is saying is if let's say the individual themselves couldn't qualify for whatever reason, the person that we're supporting, DDD is supporting, but mom is 81, would we then, because we know that this is a member who needs housing, could we assist mom in one of the other programs like the elderly program, which is a different bucket, as you said, but do we have the capacity to help mom navigate that housing program? Did I capture it, Dee?
Exactly, Angie. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, you put yourself on mute, Megan. Nope, not yet. Or do we have a referral process to refer them out to that bucket, right? Like, so do we have a connection with that bucket, with those?
Yeah, there's a, you can hear me now, right?
Yes.
There's a HUD search tool. Okay, I feel like a Verizon commercial, I'm sorry. I don't know what happened. We have a HUD search tool that we would search, and we also have good partnerships with these properties lots of times have like these types of elderly properties. Some of these property owners have a homeless preference, all different properties. They kind of have, it's called a tenant selection plan, where they identify who their target audience is and who qualifies and how they're going to select their people to live in their property. So ADOH also has a search tool that we could utilize. HUD has a search tool, and those are later in the presentation. But yes, we provide community resources. Okay. Now that I've messed with my mute, I lost my arrows. Okay, there we go. Sorry about that.
Megan, okay, can you see what hands are raised?
I can only see who's on my screen if hands are raised. Okay. If you,
yeah, I can let you know. Cynthia just raised her hand. So she.
Hi, Cynthia. How are you? I'm sorry, I missed your hand. I'm good. What's up?
I have a question. So I know DDD has a housing, United Healthcare has a housing, Mercy Care has a housing. So which door does the DDD member go through? DDD or their health plan or both?
There is no wrong door, and they can go however they choose to go, but we all connect. I have a very, very close relationship with Matt and Aaron, which are United's, Aaron is United's housing coordinator and Matt is Mercy Care's housing coordinator. And I talk about kind of the different ways that we work together, but when we are notified that one of our members is unsheltered or is in need of assistance for any of the programs, we kind of talk about what they qualify for, and we collectively apply for everything that they qualify for. So there's the Access Housing Program for the there's Access Housing Program, and there's H2O, and then there's all the DDD affordable housing stuff. And so we try to collectively apply for everything and then go with whatever first is first available. So there's no
one. Thank you.
Yeah. Anyone else? Feel free to unmute if you have questions, if I don't see you.
It's Pam. Okay. I have a question.
Yeah, Pam, go ahead.
And I might be jumping ahead, but when you were answering these questions, you were talking about head of household. In these cases, is that always going to be the member, or how is that determined? Does that question make sense, or is that coming?
Yeah.
You're good.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. I think. I hope I answer it right.
I don't know if I answered it right. So there you go.
Yeah, the head of household is usually determined by that tenant selection plan and who the partnership is with. So for our 811 units, our member is always the head of household. So if they're under guardianship, the guardian will sign the lease as, let's say it was Michelle was my guardian. And Michelle would sign the lease, Michelle for Megan Aiken.
Okay.
And so for 811 and the voucher programs, the member is always the head of household, the member that's in between the ages of 18 and 62. And then for then there's differences in some of the voucher types, and so sometimes that would determine, but for the most part we treat them all the same unless we're told that we need to do it a different way.
Okay.
But all of these, it'll always be the member.
Got it. Thank you.
That brings up a good point though too, because if there's other people in the household, they have those same rights to the unit, right? And we'll get into that in a little bit.
Thanks.
Yep. Okay. So we talked about this, two grants for $3 million. It's $3 million every 5 years, and they provide us 55 units of subsidies and 50 units in subsidies. And the fiscal year 13 units are all identified, and we fill them as vacancies occurred. And the fiscal year 19 units are identified, and we're currently working for some vacancies that are coming up. We just got notified this week that our property in Bullhead City with 6 units is ready to pre-lease. We have a new Phoenix property coming online. And so we're working our way through those fiscal year 19s in opening and filling them, and we're working them off our wait list.
Cynthia has a question.
Sure, Christina.
Hi, can you tell me, I mean, I think there's like 50,000 DDD members. So how many members are in need of this service? And what is the prediction of that growing over time? How are you measuring that?
Yes, that's a loaded question. So first, how many members are I need? We currently have, and this is later in the spot in the slideshow, but we usually have we have about 150 members on our wait list at any given time. And we so that is who is in need, who's been referred, and who is eligible. So we pre-screen when people are referred. We don't want them sitting on a wait list if they're over income or if they're not old enough or they're too old, or, you know, we want to make sure that we're screening them per the eligibility requirements. And then so that is for the 811 and COFELT units. And then the vouchers, we send out an email when they're available. The problem, and I'm sure you all know, is that there isn't enough housing to go around. And funding is getting just harder and harder to secure, right? We originally had our voucher program with Maricopa County, and we periodically they email us when somebody moves out and says, we have a voucher for you to fill. It used to be a lot more lenient and like, oh, we need a voucher, and they would be a little bit more lenient with it. But then it's becoming harder and harder to get those funds. We had a 2025 NOFO, which is a notice of funding opportunity. And NOFO is at a federal level, and a NOFA with an A is at a state level. So we were going to apply for additional. So usually we apply for 50 units at a time for the 811 program. But then that NOFO got canceled at a federal level in April, or I'm sorry, just a couple weeks ago. So that's kind of what the current need is for the current programs that we have. Kind of a little bit about the funding. Was there a third part, Cynthia?
Yeah, I appreciate that. I have a follow-up question. I'm sorry if I'm jumping ahead of your presentation.
That's okay.
But what happens, so one thing that I'm seeing, and I don't want to say a lot, but I'm seeing frequently enough that it's concerning. The member might be, they're over 13, they're under 18, and their family is homeless. The family homeless shelters are almost always full. And one of the things that happens is they want to separate the member from the parent because they're opposite sex. So is there a special program for that age group that appears to be at very high risk of being separated and therefore the member unsafe?
What was the last part? And therefore what?
The member being unsafe? Because if I'm a mom and I have a son who's 14, we can't get into a family homeless shelter, then they're going to say, I have to go to a women's shelter. He has to go to a men's shelter, even though he's, you know, a DDD member. And that would be unsafe to put him in that setting. So what's sort of happening is these people are choosing to sleep in a Walmart or on the street because they don't want to be separated from their child. So that's a, I mean, I know it's not a huge group of people, but they're super vulnerable. And I wonder if they fall into any of these programs.
So not the ones that we previously discussed, but I'll talk a little bit about why the housing assessment at the Family Housing Hub is, or UMOM, is really important if you're in Phoenix, right? This is District West, so it should be kind of in the metropolitan area, right? So when you go through the coordinated entry system and you get a housing assessment, it determines the vulnerability, and determining the vulnerability is so important because then that puts them at a higher place on the wait list for the housing authorities and the emergency housing programs. And so it's really hard to tell you like how long people wait or what is even, you know, what they qualify for, because everything is so so based on the individual and the situation. I see another hand up. but I can't see who it is.
Yeah, it's Crystal. So do you guys do the Bispadat too?
Well, do we as DDD, we are trained on how to do them. We know about them. We know that it has to be done through the coordinated entry system to access those emergency housing, because DDD does not have emergency housing.
So does the so you have another agency that does the, is that what determines the wait list, is the Bispadat?
That's how you, well, it could be any housing assessment. Right now, currently, it's the Bispadat, but there's other ones out there. And it's accessing coordinated entry through that coordinated entry access point is what determines that you're, and getting that housing assessment is puts you on the list.
Megan, just as a follow-up, I want to make sure I'm following. So to qualify for the programs that you've talked about first, you have to be over 18 and under 62.
The member.
Is that correct? The member.
The member, not the household. Just the member.
So then what happens to the member that's between the age of 13 and 17? Are they ineligible for all these programs?
They're ineligible for these programs that are listed on the screen, but we have different search. I was talking about the HUD search. There's an ADOH search for subsidies. And there's, we have a whole spreadsheet of different resources that we provide to support coordination so that they can support their members.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, okay.
Megan, you're on mute again.
I hear you.
Now am I on mute? That it just automatically mutes when you're on the phone. You're shaking your head, no, I'm not on mute, or no, you can't hear me.
We can hear you now.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm sorry. I don't know. It just must automatically mute after a while. Okay. So here's the income limits. It's based on household size. If there's a one person household and they make under $36,000, they can live at Cofelt Lamoureux on 19th Avenue in Buckeye. There's different income levels for vouchers. So that's why you'll see extremely low and very low. That's ELI and BLI. Then there's different income limits for the different areas that we serve with these programs. And so you can see all the different cities that our properties are in or going to be in soon. So for all affordable housing, every member of the household will need a birth certificate, a government issued ID, a social security card, or they must sign a form declaring their non-citizen status, and then proof of any income and assets. They are responsible for the first month, the security and rent and tent and pet deposit, initiating and paying for monthly utilities, electric, phone, cable, furnishing the unit, and then recertifying their income each year. And then they also have to report increases or decreases in income or household size within 10 days if it's over $200. And then for the voucher program, they have an application fee. For the 811 program, there's no application fees at the property. So support coordinators work as referral agents to these programs, and they refer members to the wait list using a referral form. And then we work the wait list and refer members directly to units in the order that we receive the referrals and the units are available. So we walk the members.
Cynthia has a question.
Sorry, I have my hands up, okay. I know you can't see it. But I'm gonna ask a question that makes sense. So a member could be on SSI and then they go on SSDI on their parents' work record, And the pickle rule protects those assets or protects that income from them losing their Medicaid. And then when both parents pass away, they get 75% of that parent, of the highest earning parent's Social Security. When we're talking about these housing programs, do these jumps in income get protected because they keep their Medicaid status, or do they look at income differently? Does that make sense?
I've never had somebody come and ask that question, but it's totally based on growth income. So there's no protections. Now there is a whole lot of new legislation coming out. But the only protected income in these programs is caregiver income. So if somebody has a living caregiver, they don't count that living caregiver's income towards the total household income.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Megan D also has a question.
Go ahead. Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. Megan,
I just want to make sure that I understood. When you work on your list as to who gets referred, it's first come, first serve. Is that correct?
It depends on the program. So we have a wait list for 811 in Coffeyville, and the reason that it's one wait list is because the eligibility requirements are all the same, right? And so that is first in, first out. So if somebody got referred in 2018, and I have numbers about this later, but and there's somebody that was referred in 2024, the 2018 person is going to obviously get offers first. Some people hang out on the wait list for a really long time because they really want a certain area, or they really want a certain building, and they don't get penalized for declining offers. They just prefer to wait for something that is available that fits their needs and their preferences. So somebody who has a lot of preferences is going to probably wait a little bit longer than somebody who's like, I'll take whatever you have available, right?
What do you do with somebody whose choice is the street today, or we got to find them housing? Do they go to the top of some list and we find them housing as soon as possible? How do we handle that?
We engage all systems of care. So we talk to the behavioral health system, we loop in the health plan housing coordinators, we make sure that anything that they're eligible for, that they're applying for, and that they have the documents that they need to apply for those things. And then they have to go through coordinated entry to access emergency housing.
So does a support coordinator hold their hand through this? Do you hold their hand through this? How do they get through the system? Do you just hand them a list and say, here you go, you got an intellectual or developmental disability, but you figure it out? What do we do as DDD?
So we get a report of the people that are engaging with the HMIS system. We just got this report like 2 weeks ago, and we got it for 3 months worth from Access. And there is about 8 individuals on each report. And most of the individuals are on that report are choosing homelessness. So what we do is we engage everybody that we can, but we can't change people's choices, right? And we just really try to amp up the care coordination for them. The support coordinator reaches out to us, we provide them resources, and we ask that they coordinate those community resources.
Yeah, I think the support coordinator, if I could just jump in for a second, Megan, I think the support coordinator would spearhead a lot of that coordination. I mean, when I was a support coordinator and I saw somebody was on the verge of homelessness, you know, or was already experiencing homelessness, I was ringing all the bells trying to find a shelter for that person to go to that would be safe for that individual. So just kind of the support coordinator would take the lead in that. And in that process would be, of course, for long-term housing to be applying for these programs, right? But it's not emergency shelter by any means. I mean, that's the sadness of it. And we are going to Cynthia's point, we are going to, as a society, see more, and we see it every day, the increase in home and in unhoused individuals just is growing day by day by day. And I don't think individuals that we support are exempt from that by any means. So, you know, Megan and her team do a really good job of making sure support coordinators understand that this is a resource that families can apply to even before, you know, they're at risk. You know, if the income, if they can qualify through the income, we want folks applying prior to, so that way, should something happen, they're, you know, they have that safety net built in.
Do we, Megan or Angie, do we have a tool for DDD support coordinators to use to be proactive in identifying members who may be housing vulnerable? I don't know what the politically correct term is, but do we have some kind of training so that support coordinators are being proactive and looking for people who are going to have this issue before they have the issue?
I don't know that there's a process. Megan, do you want to speak to that? You just came off mute.
Sure, I did. I was going to let you go first if you wanted to, but in our fair housing training, we have lots and lots of tools. We have, we talk about the coordinated entry system and what to do if you find that your member has housing insecurity. I know a lot of, and I'm going to let Angie speak to the person-centered service planning part of it, but we've got tools to see for habilitation goals where they can kind of look and say, is this member ready to live in the community on their own, or do we need to like support them with habilitation before we start to make those referrals into affordable housing? So we have lots and lots of support. We've got like a tool that for every area, most areas, but I don't want to speak to other areas, but for my area, where it's like when to contact us, why we would contact you, with all sorts of links and things. So there's lots of support. And then we attend those circle of support coordination calls that they do. I'm on the roster for those every 6 months. So I talk to them lots.
I would just add to that, that, you know, like support coordinators are trained in the Maslow's hierarchy of need, right? So how can we even have a good plan if we know that this person is at risk, if they can't put food on their table, if they can't, you know, if they can't pay their rent? Those are the things that team should be talking about and that family should be articulating, and they should be looking around and be able to, if the family can articulate, at least pick up on that as somebody who's trained in understanding the needs of the family. Even though there may not be are you experiencing homelessness or are you close to eviction isn't on the PCSP, I would imagine that holistic approach would include that conversation.
We also requested that housing insecurity be added as a into focus as a system, and it's on our dashboard, and it was like goals for the division to work towards. We're not there yet, but we are gathering our data and we are making data informed decisions in how to move forward with that.
So before you answer Crystal's question, I think Michelle put in the chat about ABLE accounts. Do you want to talk about resources versus income?
Sorry.
That's okay. And I didn't know if that was part of your.
No, that's okay. No, I was trying to look at the question. The question is, what about ABLE accounts? The ABLE accounts, now, are we talking because they would be counted as income, Michelle?
Okay, Megan, I'm going to stop you for 1 minute. Larry? The individual who asked the question is not an IOC member. I don't have a problem with Megan answering the question, but do we have an open meetings law problem?
Sorry, Dee, yes, I should have responded.
Yes, you do. Members of the public cannot interject themselves into the body of the meeting. She had an opportunity to voice her opinion or her questions at the time of the call to the public. So, sorry.
Okay. Megan, because you were willing to answer the question and you started answering the question, is the chair of the committee, I'll ask the question, what about ABLE accounts? If you don't mind answering it, I appreciate your courtesy. We're being very careful making sure that we do exactly what we're supposed to do with open meetings, especially with the call to the public, because we've invited them to be here. And I don't want the Attorney General calling us on the carpet. I'm going to Larry's training tomorrow, but I want to make sure our I's are dotted and our T's are crossed. So please don't take any of this.
That. No, I'm not offended at all.
Yeah,
I know. We've been together a long time.
I apologize.
So as far as the ABLE account, so the income is the income, right? The income limits are just set so that it's looking at the income. So my understanding about ABLE accounts is that they are not counted as income, but it's not up to me. And so sometimes people perceive things differently. And what we do is we gather all of the information and then we turn it over to the property, and the property compliance then makes their decision. We have people, and so the income limits, and then there's also resource limits. So like if people own property, they can't be earning income on it and things like that. So I'm sorry, it's called assets. I was blanking on the word. Assets, there's income and asset limits that the property runs a bunch of checks and then they decide whether or not it's eligible or not.
Megan, Crystal does still have a question.
Go ahead, Crystal.
So my question mostly has to do with like this housing, not just for DDD, it's for SMI and for everything, is so complicated. Again, with this individual that I assisted, I took this on myself and it was a full-time job for about 3 weeks. And there really wasn't any list that was helpful. And there really wasn't any support while I was in the middle of it that was very helpful. I don't even know if what he got, I don't know what he qualified for. Again, I've never done this. But he is in a rent that's about 60% of his income. So I am interested in, there was like two slides back that said something about 36,000, under 36,000. That one program he might qualify for.
He's not all X, right, Crystal?
He's not. And that's the other part, is you're saying, well, what about habilitation? Well, they don't get habilitation. They don't get anything. So
there is vouchers that you don't have to qualify. How old is he? Can you remind me?
He's like 33.
Sorry. Okay. So the vouchers, as they come out, when we have them, we email support coordination and we say, we have this one voucher, and whoever gets their documentation in first. When you and I were talking, we didn't have that available. And when it does come out, I would hope that the support coordinator would reach out and say, you know, hey, this is available. They do have to be willing to live in the voucher area. And I'm going to go back, Crystal, a couple of slides for you. And I'm just going to tell Angie I'm on slide 12 to help me remember.
Yeah, it was back a couple. There it was.
Yeah, this so, one. So we're talking. One,
let me write that down.
Colfort Lamoureux, he wouldn't qualify for because he's not all tax eligible. But for the Housing Authority of Maricopa County, and he works in the East Valley, right?
Yeah.
And so that was the problem. The East Valley.
Well, he's living in Phoenix anyway. I mean, that's the only place that was there.
He is in Phoenix now? Okay. So there is a couple of these valley locations. You have to be willing to live in the area that the voucher serves. And so he could be Phoenix ELI or Phoenix VLI. So and 811 PRA Phoenix and the HAMC limit are the same.
Yeah, but doesn't he have to make under 18,800?
For the you're looking right here, that's Tucson.
Or whichever one. Oh, that one's 31. Let's see.
For Phoenix, 21.6 for one member at the extreme level.
Yeah, again.
And these are updated every March. And I don't know with everything going on, how to stay timely about it this year or not. We haven't seen any memos about it yet.
Megan, if nothing else comes through with your presentation tonight, I want the IOC members to understand how complicated this is and how individual specific this is and how, unfortunately, you just can't snap your fingers and get housing for people.
Well, and that's why
I would.
Well, and that's why I think even to expect the case managers to know all this, I mean, really the specialists need to step up and like assist the people who are trying to do this. Cause you know, when the case manager's got, you know, 60 other people that they're trying to care for, to get somebody housed who you can't get housed is.
Great point, Crystal. But I do want to make it clear that the case manager, the support coordinator, all they have to do is put a referral in, and Megan and her team, they're the specialists that really put a lot of effort into figuring, helping them put the application in and getting all that stuff done. That's their team's responsibility. The SC just has to wave the flag and say, you know, I have somebody that might be eligible and I want to put in, I want to refer them. So we definitely don't expect support coordinators to know all of this. I mean,
okay. Because I was going to say we were
no way.
I was just looking back, and it was November that we put in all this information, and I didn't receive any information ever, even until January when I finally found him housing. So,
yeah.
November, December, January. So at least 3 months.
When did we talk?
I can look it up. Probably.
Right before he moved in, because I remember I was calling shelters and he said, he moved into his apartment.
Yeah. Yeah, you came in at the very end of the, you came in when we were at, when I was actually in the search where I had taken really almost like 2 weeks out of my time to go from place to place to place. So.
And if you find something, you really have to grab it. That's really, I mean.
Yeah, we couldn't wait. So.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So you were on slide 12.
I'm back there, and I'm going to go a little bit quicker because I think I've gone through a lot of this. But basically, yeah. We're the liaison to the properties, and we properties bring issues to us, and then we work with the team to resolve them. We talked a little bit about live-in aids. They can be paid or unpaid. They don't count towards income of the household, but everyone has to pass a background check. And then the HUD's definition of a live-in aid is someone who wouldn't otherwise live in the unit other than to provide care for the resident. Here's Sarah. She's a success story. She lives at one of our really beautiful properties, and she received habilitation. And her mom never thought that Sarah was going to move out on her own. And Sarah was like, I can do it. And she did. And she's a rock star. And here's another success story. This member moved in with her mom and dad. And mom was finally able to get some full-time employment because they had stable housing. And dad was able to help care for the member, and mom helped care for dad. I just wanted to let you know a little bit about how 811 units are identified. It's either through a NOFO, which we talked about earlier, a notice of funding availability. I'm sorry, a NOFA is at a state level that ADOH puts out. That's how our 2013 units were identified. And our 2019 units were identified by properties and owners opting in through low-income housing tax credits or LIHTC. I don't ever say it all in one. So then we meet with ADOH because they receive the $3 million every 5 years for two $3 million grants every 5 years. So they receive that funding. So we work with them to get contracts in place for the units that are selected. And then they enter into what's called a RAC or an ARAC. ARAC is for Arizona Rental Agreement Contract, and a RAC is for a rental agreement, a contract with HUD. They're established, and then once they have all of the payment systems and contracts in place, then they let DDD know that they have available units. And once we know that they have available units, then we start working down the list and referring members to the property. And we work with teams throughout the application process to get their birth certificates, their IDs, all their documentation together. And then we submit a complete referral packet to the property. And then property geographic location is a direct result of just the responses that we received from those two sources, the LIHTC application, and then the notice of funding availability if we don't have enough people to opt in. And there's a pretty picture of one of our 811 units. And there's a pretty picture of Cofelt Lamoureux on 19th Avenue in Buckeye. And this is a little bit about the voucher process. Basically, I've already talked to you a little bit throughout it. The important thing to know is that they should never, ever, ever sign a lease with a voucher until the housing authority approves it, because they have to go through an inspection and make sure that the housing is safe. And the other thing that's really important to know about vouchers is you can't subsidize a subsidy. It's fraud. So you can't agree to pay 30% and then pay an extra $200 for a nicer unit. That doesn't fly with the housing authority. So, and then there's a briefing. Once the packet is submitted to the housing authority, the briefing is where the member actually gets the voucher. And then they go through the search of finding a unit in the area that they would like. And then they lease up, hopefully. So here, people will ask us all the time, where are we on the wait list? And we don't really share that because it's one wait list for all bedroom sizes. So even if you're number 50, if everybody before you is a two bedroom and you're a one bedroom, you're first on the one bedroom, right? Or if everybody is Tucson only. So we just share the generals, and the generals are about 145 people on the wait list. You'll see the one bedroom list is a little bit bigger because that's not we don't have as many units that are one bedroom. We have hardly any four bedroom units, but we only have five people on that list. The longest wait is a member who is actually in the application process right now. Went on our list in March of 2018, and the shortest wait was 7 days, and that was somebody who happened to come along when we had exhausted our wait list and we had a unit available, and they were willing to take that unit.
And Megan, just so that the record is clear, because we have a record here.
Sure.
How many DDD members do we have in the state of Arizona at this time?
Oh, Angie, it's like between around 50, I want to say. Yeah.
We are at 56 and some change. But if you want the exact number, I'll have to pull a report as of
now. I just want people to understand that there's 145 people waning out of 56,000 plus DDD members. That's the point I'm trying to make, Angie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Pretty good numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really good number that you'll like, Steve. So from our program started in 2017, and it started with the Cofelt Lamoureux and the 811 grants. And from those partnerships, we received those additional voucher programs that we have. But 11 members making progressive moves when we originally initiated reaching out to teams and things. We were reaching out to teams and identifying people that might have been in a higher level of care than they needed to be. And that we identified these 11 members, and they have saved the division $3,587 in service costs. And that is the difference in paying a daily rate for services versus an hourly rate for services. And it's only 11 members. And I put this slide in just today for you, Dee.
I appreciate it.
You were asking about data, and I thought Dee is really going to like to know what we get. So we have three reports that come into our office, and these are actually new reports. Access has really been focusing on everyone having access to HMIS, the Homeless Management Information System. And also they've been putting a lot of things in our contracts around homelessness. So we're really focusing on building those partnerships. So last year we started receiving the ABC report, which is the report of people who are applying to the Access Housing Program or residing in the Access Housing Program. And so we receive that report on a monthly basis. And when we receive that report, we indicate that they need to be like bumped up higher on the list due to the level of care that our members have, that our members need. Right now, the last one I got, there was two members residing in AHP, which is the Access Housing Program. And then there were four members waiting. And then we get ABC and Home are, I put a link there for more information about the Access Housing Program if you're interested in the eligibility requirements. And then the Solari report that we get, that is a, we get a monthly report, and actually it's a bi-weekly report. Originally we're going to do monthly, and then we ended up getting bi-weekly. So every other Friday I get a report of anybody who's eligible for H2O and then anybody who's moving forward with H2O. So the last report I got, no one was moving forward. I've been told that there was one person in the past moving forward. And that report usually is 1 to 0 members. Originally, like, I see your hand and I will get to it. we did a big data poll, not us, but Solari did, because they're the statewide housing administrator for H2O. And originally we had about 70 members on the report. And then what we did was we told Solari who their health plan was so that they could coordinate directly with their health homes. Okay, Dee, go ahead.
Yeah, last month we had the justice coordinators speak to us. Are you getting reports from them of individuals who are being released from incarceration so that you can help to get them housing ASAP?
They are including me in their monthly meetings. And then what I'm doing for those monthly meetings is I'm comparing them to see have they applied for everything that they could possibly be eligible for. And do we have any other information that would be helpful? And then yes, then what are they eligible for in the end, right? Yeah, so I'm involved in their release. I don't know, Nicole, it's a monthly meeting where they go over everybody who they're tracking. So yes, I just started attending.
Megan, just so you understand, we, besides being a pain in everybody's backside, we do ask these questions because we want the public to be aware of the actual things that DDD is doing. And it's our job to make recommendations to DDD for improvements. So this is your opportunity to let us know overtly or covertly if there's something you need that you need us to ask for our members on your behalf. We would appreciate you letting us know. If you're not comfortable doing it with your bosses on the phone, get my email address and send it to me, and we will be happy to ask for whatever is going to help you to do your job. We do understand that you're a caring professional, and your hands, unfortunately, are tied by system limitations.
I really appreciate that. I see your hand, Crystal. And just, I love my bosses. I have no problem putting anything in front of them. They're all great. Go this ahead,
just,
Crystal.
Just a quick question. What would you say the average is of the wait list? Would you say it's years or months or?
So for my wait list or these wait lists?
Well, no, I know the wait list for some of it's long, like for your wait list, that 145.
My list, yeah, no, that's okay. I eliminated that. I took it off only because it's so fluctuating, but the last time I checked it, it was about 7 months, the average. And it's because, you know, some people stay on it for a super long time. Some people are just taking the first available unit, and it directly correlates to, you know, how desperate their situation is, right? Yeah. Obviously, if you're offered something and you're desperate, then you're going to need to take the first one. And like I said, we don't penalize people for waiting longer. They just keep their spot on the wait list, and then we come back to them when we have something that fits their needs. So about 7 months, but it's going to fluctuate a lot because we have a lot of properties opening from our 2019 grant. So I anticipate that the average will go down for a bit, and then it will go back up once those 2019 units are filled, because we won't have any vacancies to refer people to. Right now, they're coming in batches of like 6 and 5 and 8. But then once those are filled, then it'll get a little bit longer probably. And then it will all depend on whether or not there's new funding available at a federal level for ADOH to apply for.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, I think I have a few slides left. So I think we've all talked about coordinated entry enough. 211 has lots of resources. They update their resources every 2 weeks. So in addition to us, we just want to make sure that we always share that with members and NSCs. And then we always just want to make sure that people are getting that housing assessment, that report from Access. I'm sorry, I skipped over something on the left slide. So I got to the Solar report bi-weekly, and then the Access report is monthly. And that is the people that are in the homeless management information system. And that is statewide across all continuums of care. And so that's really, really exciting because we've never really been able to data mine the cross between the Access ID number and the people that are engaging in the HMIS system. And now that all of the data is with Dwell in a data warehouse that all of the COCs or continuum of cares use, there's 3 in Arizona. It enabled Access to develop those agreements and then push those back out to their plan. So the ACC plans, DDD, we're all getting those reports now, which is really exciting. And then, so we're currently working on kind of merging like how we're working them, but basically the overall framework is we're contacting the support coordinator, we're looping in the health plan, homeless coordinator or housing coordinators, and then we're reviewing what they would be eligible for and then applying for everything that we can. Okay. So you all are almost done with me, but this is, I think it was Pam that asked the question about, is it available to support coordinators and are they aware of it? So this is a really cool feature in Google, and I don't know if you can see it very well, but it'll tell you that these tools that we've had, so this tool has been around since 2021, and we do Google tools for support coordinators, so they're always up to date with what's available. But it's been viewed 726 times by unique viewers. So that doesn't mean like if I go into it twice that you'll see it. And then the next tool that we have is the community resources tool that has the homeless, it has all the different resources for the programs that aren't through our office, like the public programs, like the coordinated entry information, Access housing program, all of those tools on that, that one has been opened 135 times by unique viewers. And last time I checked, there was around 1,000 support coordinators. Angie, do you think that's about maybe a little bit more than that, I would guess?
We just got that number. Hold on, I'll give it to you. Do you remember what it was, Angie?
I want to say it was 1,100, but
I was going to say 600. Oh, no, it wasn't support coordinators. It was complete full-time staff. Yeah,
1,115 is what I'm going to guess.
Solid guess, Megan.
That's what it was?
No, I don't know. I don't know. Got the total number of full-time employees, but not support coordination, but we definitely can get that for you.
Okay. I'm pretty sure the last time I asked, which was maybe 6 months ago or so, it was 1,115. Okay, so this just tells you that they're accessing it. They're accessing it on a regular basis. We have these, and these are only two of our tools, and we have lots of tools available to them. We have one sheet that is a link to all the different tools, but these are the two that are the most impactful, I would say. So I just wanted to bring that up for the question that Pam asked, is it accessible and do they know about it? So in addition to the trainings, we also have documents that are available to them. And then here's some helpful links if you're wanting to click around. I talked about the HUD search and the ADOH search, the Housing Authority of Maricopa County website, if you're curious as to what areas they serve. Any place that has their own housing authority would not be included in their vouchers, so like major cities like Phoenix. And then Affordable Housing Online is how you can keep up to date on what waitlists are open. We do send out emails when we're aware that waitlists are open, and we also participate in calls with the Arizona Department of Housing, where they have it's called Homeless to Housing Call is what it's called, and they invite anyone who is in that arena to kind of come and share their struggles and their successes, and it's a really nice way to collaborate with other boots on the ground agencies. So that is all. This is the customer service number. If you have specific questions regarding specific members, if you can let us know what member it is, so we can kind of track what we're sending out. That will be great. With a name and a birthday would be wonderful, but we'll give you information even if you don't give us that. But we do track by member the inquiry. And that is it. Does anybody else have any questions?
I just wanted to kind of add to that amazing presentation that while someone's on a wait list, the team, the support coordinator and the team should be really be talking about what it looks like for that person to be successful in that, in their home, right? In their home that they're applying for. So, you know, early and often, you know, does that person have supports that can teach them, you know, independent living skills? Do they need a service that, you know, because they don't have family supports to help them learn to be independent? Because it's not just about getting a voucher and being able to afford an apartment. It's about being able to maintain an apartment and be a good neighbor and live independently, because not everybody gets that opportunity to learn those things organically. So what does that look like for folks? You know, so those things have to happen in tandem with this process.
Does anybody want to make a motion? Do we have any recommendations that we want to make to DDD regarding the housing program, or do we want to think about it and revisit it at a later date?
Well, I have probably some recommendations about all the housing programs, but
Crystal, do you want to write those up and we
can, yeah,
we can put them on the agenda for another meeting when you're ready?
Yeah.
I'm certainly not an expert on the housing programs, and I'll definitely defer to Crystal, but I just want to make sure when we're talking about all this, we're including, you know, that at risk from 13 to 17 year olds, because I don't know, there's nothing there. The family homeless shelters are always full. And so I love that they're working on these programs, but I just want to make sure that we put something in there about that special population.
The one thing I can say is, besides that, the homeless shelters are not the appropriate place for many of the DDD members.
Oh, 100%. I don't disagree.
Yeah,
but when you say to them, sleep in the parking lot, or we're going to separate mother from child, I mean, I just have no words with that. I mean, that is not a choice.
Yeah, well, try putting an autistic individual in CAS.
Yeah, well,
who wets the bed? So, yeah, not gonna work.
I'll go on the record. I'd be sleeping in the parking lot in the car with my kid.
Yeah.
Cynthia and Crystal, do you guys want to get together and be ready next meeting
to have? I'm happy to help, but I think Crystal knows way more than, I mean, I really don't know much except for what I'm saying.
Yeah, give me 2 months, Dee.
Okay.
Because this is really busy down in the legislature. And Cynthia, I'll just call you to make sure that I don't miss out on the that group.
So we'll put it on the May agenda.
And Dee, I just want to give a big thank you to United Healthcare, because that family did choose to go sleep in a Walmart parking lot. And even though they weren't even a United Healthcare member, United Healthcare, Dawn, on a Saturday went looking at all the Walmarts to find this family and found them. So we have great partners who care about our population. It's just, you know, the system is not very responsive.
Yeah, I hope that everybody understands that the purpose of the presentation, as I tried to explain in the email that I sent to Michelle, and I hope that everybody understands at these DDD District West IOC meetings, the purpose is not to ask DDD staff to these meetings so that we can beat up on them and put a target on their backs. It's to find out what the challenges and barriers are that you are dealing with so that we can make recommendations to DDD. Whether they listen to us or not is a whole nother story, but at least we want to be on the record making recommendations to help improve policy and systems and procedures to improve the lives of DDD members. I have yet to meet someone who's come before this committee who is not a sincere professional who takes their job very seriously and tries their best to help members. But unfortunately, including Angie, has their hands tied behind their back because of system limitations. So I just want the word out among the DDD staff. It may not be comfortable that we ask tough questions, but we're not here to put you in front of a firing squad. We're here because we're all on the same team. We want to help DDD members.
Dee?
Yeah.
Our last meeting was on Justice Reach-In.
Yeah.
And I would like to report back that one of the justice liaisons actually came to our Be Safe training, which we had discussed at the last meeting. They reached out and they were able to come to the actual training, which I thought was awesome. And funny story, but one of the people who attended that training was Mark's second support coordinator when he was like 4 years old. So it's a small world, but I'm happy to see that, you know, I do think these relationships are important. And I'm sorry about my dog.
Okay, if we're ready to move on, Michelle, what's next on our list? Is it the reports from DDD?
Dee, can I just say one thing? Because I don't want to end with thinking that I'm hot on the housing issue. I'm in the middle of housing also with the SMI population. And so we met with ABC Housing. I'm meeting with Home Inc. I'm meeting with Access. We're meeting with the trust fund. So I'm kind of in the middle of housing. And DDD, just so you know, while you only have 145 members that you're trying to serve, just so you know, you're doing a good job, because SMI has 6,150. So you're doing pretty good. And they're housing about 30 people every 3 months. And it's the same people that are either going in or out. So it's no extra units. So you're doing good. But I would like to do a little bit more with housing and maybe reach out to you guys to learn a little bit more of how we can because we're putting data together and money together to try to go to legislature to make sure that we get these people housed, you know, whether they're DDD or SMI. So you can't recover and stuff unless you're housed, and whatever level of housing that needs to be. So I do appreciate your work. I don't know how you do it. I would not do your job for a million years. That was the you know, the most complicated thing I've ever done.
We do it for multiple people at a time, but Crystal, you have my cell phone number. You can reach out anytime.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm happy to help you, and I'm happy to revisit if you feel like this place your person went is.
Well, I actually do have questions about him as well, but I don't have your cell phone number anymore because I accidentally deleted it. So I'll have to re-get it.
I'll text you right now.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. And thank you. And thank you for everything you do. I do want to make sure that you guys know that.
I really appreciate the questions. I really do.
Okay, Dee. Sorry.
So, Michelle, what's next on our agenda? It's the updates, correct?
If you want to do a little jumping around, yeah, that's fine.
What's listed on the agenda? I don't have it in front of me.
Discussion and review of incident reports and behavior plans.
Okay, does anybody have any incident reports or behavior plans they want to discuss? Okay, that's a no. Next issue, Michelle.
Okay.
That is a no. Discussion,
review, and possible action regarding any policy issue of concern to IOC members, including requests for education presentations.
Anybody have any of those? Nope. Next item, Michelle.
All righty. DDD and access policy notification review and discussion. That's kind of the same as the one before.
Oh, Cynthia's got one.
There you go.
You know, I do have one. I don't know if DDD is on steroids or what, but the amount of policies that are being reviewed and put out for public comment, like I think I have like 20 or 25 in my email box right now. I'm just not, I don't know if this is even appropriate time to just say this, but it seems very hard for, you know, us members who care about the DDD policies. It's almost impossible to keep up with the volume of publications for public comment. Like, does anyone else feel the volume is like through the roof?
Cynthia, the one thing that I can tell you, and Angie's shaking her head, and I will go on the record to say this, there is not one DDD policy that is not a response to something from CMS or Access, DES or ADOA. It's that the people at DDD don't have time to sit around and come up with new and interesting policies. They're lucky that they can react to requirements to make sure that they don't get citations from anybody.
I don't disagree, but it also still has to be reviewed by people.
Yes.
And I don't know who has time to be able to do it, which means they're not getting reviewed by the public, and that concerns me.
I can tell you that the service animal, companion animal, and pet policy that came out today is fine in my eyes. So there's nothing we have to worry about. But I do read them. Michelle?
I just did want to say that the committees, the IOC committee, receives 60 days to review them. So you do have a little bit of extra time. I don't know if that takes a little hit off of it, Cynthia.
No, I know. It's just when you're working a full-time job.
Yeah.
And you also want to be a good steward to the process. It's hard to do. And I'm not saying that they're doing it on purpose to make my life miserable, but
Angie might be. Given some of your questions, I don't know, Cynthia, Angie might be.
But I think it's hard for advocates and members of the community to keep up with.
Just to clarify the record, Angie does not develop any of these policies. People who work for Angie develop policies. So,
well, I read every single one also before it even goes out to the public. So I feel your pain. I got all those blasts on Friday night. My email was going. I was like, what's happening? I had to jump on the computer and make sure everything was okay. So I hear you.
I'm not the only one then.
No, I will echo what Dee said, that we joke internally quite often about how often access changes the smallest thing in a policy, and then we have to go and make sure ours matches. And as soon as we get it published, they change it again. And so it's just, it's like laundry. It's never done. So we feel your pain.
As a professional compliance officer, it is as it should be. It keeps me employed. So Michelle, what's next on our list?
Let's see. We are at DDD staff updates.
Take it away, Michelle.
I was just going to offer, Michelle, do you want to excuse the housing team? I see Barb put in chat that they were going to jump off. So I just wanted to give them permission to do so if they chose.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming, ladies.
No problem.
Thank you. Okay, sorry I interrupted, Michelle.
Oh, that's fine. While you're talking, do you want to provide an update, or were you prepared for that this evening?
We are prepared, but Christina's going to go first.
Okay. Well, one thing that I didn't actually have on the list because I missed your last meeting was last month, so that would have been February, BDD held two special town halls, one on the parents as paid caregivers kind of changes that are rolling out. And the information for that, we have the slide deck posted on our website, but we'll make sure to drop the link in the chat as well. That was, I think, the first week of February. And then the second week of February, we held another special town hall that was devoted just to DDD growth and what we're seeing in terms of that. I know Dee saw that presentation when Zane gave it at governance, and I think some other people might have as well. Cynthia, what's up?
So regarding the growth, is DDD able to say how much of the growth is due to new diagnosing of people who already live in the state versus people moving to the state? And the reason I'm asking this question is Autism Society is getting a lot of phone calls over the last year from people living in other states that are specifically moving here for the paid parent provider program. And one example I'll give you is Idaho. So I cannot tell you how many people have called me from Idaho who just got rid of their paid parent provider program because it was not sustainable. And so those people are talking about moving here. So I'm wondering how DDD is tracking that growth numbers, and are you tracking how much of the growth is due to movement into the state?
That is a fabulous question, Cynthia.
I know it is.
we can take that back and find out what the data points are and if we're in fact tracking that for sure.
Okay. And if I would love that, and I would appreciate an answer. Then I would like us as an IOC to request that data be tracked, if we're allowed to request that, Dee. I don't know if I'm out of line.
Oh, you're on mute. Dee, we didn't hear what you said. You're on mute.
Sorry. Of course we can, Cynthia. All it takes is a motion, a second, and a vote. So if you would like to make a motion.
I would like to make a motion that DDD go back and look and see if they're tracking the data of growth based on diagnosing within the state and movement from other states into our state. And if they're not tracking that data, I would like to recommend that they start to track that data.
Okay.
I would second that.
And are there any nays? Ayes?
Aye. All in favor, aye. Yep.
I got to do it by voice vote. So you got to get yourself off mute. I actually have to hear the.
Aye.
The ayes.
Aye.
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 Okay, motion. I can't vote. Motion passes unanimously. So I'll have Michelle, can you pull the transcript for me to get the wording when we're done?
Yeah, tomorrow I'll pull that up.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't need it.
Right. It'll take Google a little bit to process, but yeah.
I don't need it at this moment, but then I can write up the motion and we'll submit it to DDD. As long as we're on this subject, Christina.
Yeah.
I'm going to chime in and Angie can jump in if she's the better person to confirm this. But there is misinformation among the parent community. I'm seeing it on social media. There are DDD qualified vendor agreement agencies who are telling their employees and also telling the families of their clients that DDD, for whatever reason, is purposely not paying them. Mm. So I have gone on social media in the parent Facebook groups that I'm in, and I just did it before we started this meeting because this really angers me with everything else going on. And I have said there is no concerted effort among DDD as long as you are submitting a clean claim. And there are no bugs within SanData, WellSky, or Focus, or the compatibility among them. You're going to get paid. And mm-hmm. I've even shared with them my employer, Norris Group, our client. We have some DDD QVA agency clients, and nobody's reporting to us that they're not getting paid from DDD. So if either you or Angie can confirm that there is no concerted effort, even though the federal government is promising and the Arizona legislature is promising funding cuts, it at this moment is business as usual at DDD. Providers provide the service, submit clean claims, DDD pays the claims. You're supposed to pay the claims within 30 days. You pay the claims before 30 days. If you pay the claim after 30 days, you have to pay interest. But it's business as usual. There's no campaign going on.
That is absolutely true and correct.
I appreciate it. And
Can I just ask a question about that? Because I love it how these rumors get started. But I'm just curious if DDD is... Because you just did a new qualified vendor situation where you got rid of some vendors and added some vendors. And so through that process, are you noticing some lack of ability to submit clean claims that is more than usual?
The first 2 weeks of January, there were some barriers to some providers being able to for their claims to get paid. It took about 10 days and so we asked the provider community not to bill until after the 10th. And so there was some lag there. And I can imagine those smaller agencies who, don't have a lot of resources, to live on, they're living
paycheck. Just let's keep the record straight.
Yes. That's
despite their contractual obligation.
Yes.
That is contract they sign to have 90 days worth of operating expenses available at all times.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So I do want to interject. We can't have a full discussion on this topic. It's not on the agenda at the time. Thanks, but we can add it for the next meeting.
Yep. I think we should. And if I can request, and Dee, just tell me, just shut up if you want me to. I would love to revisit the growth in DDD next month.
Yeah, we can put that. We can put that on the topic, and we'll include this. Crystal, you're on mute.
I also, and again, this can go on the agenda for next time too, because I know it's getting late. But I also wanted to know. I can't make it to these town halls because I'm so busy downtown, but I would like just like quick update of what is changing, because I do, I'm very active in the DDD community. A lot of people call me just to kind of give like heads up to people. I don't know if we have time now, but maybe next week we can get an update on what is changing.
Crystal, what is changing in response to the budget?
What is,
what is changing in just in general?
No, about the paid provider program or any big cuts or changes that is happening that we know of that's for sure that that I can pass on to people and as they're asking, you know.
I just dropped the link for the town hall for that entire slide deck that talks about the updates regarding parents as paid caregivers in the chat. And if you can't access that, Crystal, I can always email it to you later.
Yeah, can you email me both of those?
Yeah, for sure.
I only have the technology to copy and paste one.
Yeah. Michelle emails them all out anyway, so don't you, Michelle?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Of course. So that was part one of my update. And then the other part is earlier this week, the executive leadership team spent some time together looking at all of the information that was gathered from the strategic planning sessions with stakeholders, as well as the surveys. They spent, I think, two full days together this week, Angie, going kind of sifting through all of that information and coming up kind of with next steps to create the plan for the strategic plan. And as that updates, we will keep you all updated with any info that we have going forward. So
and
now I'll pass it
on. All right. So Christina covered the two main ones, but support coordinators started a new training February 19th. It's a 3-day training, and it is based, it is a needs assessment training. So, you know, earlier we were talking about looking at that whole person, and that includes if somebody's at risk of being unhoused, really focusing on the needs of the individual. And the reason for that training is to ensure that they really have a comprehensive process for analyzing all areas of the person's life, and they really do are able to collect and understand the strengths and needs and interests of the individual. And part of that is that NCQA accreditation the division is trying to obtain. That was one of the requirements. So,
is there, Angie, is there any proactivity in that training? We've been talking about this for it's almost a decade that I personally sat down with Sherry Wentz and her staff, and we came up with a crisis identification tool that has never been implemented.
Mm.
Is there proactivity to that training so that not only are they assessing the need now, but they're going to be able to identify there may be a need a year down the road? Or 6 months or 2 months down the road, depending upon what the needs are.
You know, I'm not sure, but I am attending the training next week. So I'd be happy to dialogue with you and provide you feedback on that, on whether or not it it's allowing them to have foresight, right, and have those conversations. Yeah. I mean, the whole entire program should be based around being proactive and not reactive, right?
There are a lot of issues that are going to be coming up in the next decade. There's going to be a lot of cliffs as not only our members age, which they're doing. I mean, you think about individuals with Down syndrome and how old they are now, but also 90% of them are living with families and
aging caregivers.
And parents are older than they were. So there's all kinds of issues there that need to be proactively identified and planned for.
Yeah, future planning for sure.
So I was shocked to learn from some parents, and it was confirmed by individuals that parents don't have retirement savings for themselves, let alone anything else for their children. So right. we're talking a big cliff in the next decade, in the decade after that. So
absolutely.
The more proactive, the better.
Yeah.
I had a follow-up question regarding this needs assessment. Yeah. And I would love, after you attend, to hear from you about it. But I'm wondering, we do have some members that have total care needs and are medically involved. And a question came up today about whether the DDD member would be better served in the EPD side because of needing assisted living. And so I'm wondering, when we're doing this needs assessment, just like Dee said, as all these people age, they're going to need, you know, skilled nursing, assisted living, and these are not things that I, in my experience, have seen DDD really provide. I mean, I've seen some medical group homes, but for this aging population, how are we assessing that and planning for that?
One of the things that I noticed is that the Arizona Department of Health Services, they license group homes. They've now put the licensing of DDD group homes in the same department as assisted living homes for the elderly. So I'm hoping that means that they recognize that this is an upcoming issue.
I hope so, because I am hearing from families where skilled nursing doesn't want our special needs people. You know, that's not who they generally serve. And I do know one member who really needs assisted living. And so I guess I would love to know, I have heard you can go from EPD to DDD, but I am curious to know if you could ever go from DDD to EPD, because, you know, those are just different qualified networks.
Sure. Yeah. So the answer to that, as far as all of my knowledge, is that you cannot. Once you're in DDD's category, you can't switch over to EPD at any time. But I will say that DDD hasn't used assisted living, as you guys know, as a model for how we support individuals with developmental disabilities. But when that need comes up with an individual, we can do individual contracts with certain settings if necessary. So, and that, you know, that of course takes a lot of planning and a lot of discussion with the team and a lot of coordination, but it's not impossible if that is in fact the right setting or the appropriate setting for that individual. But, you know, we as a division would really like to see our responsibilities to support that person till the end of their life. So if it means bringing supports into their own home, we would always try and do that as long as possible until we can't, you know?
I love that. But when you're a total needs person, so sure. It's not that DDD is not being generous with what they're giving. Let me be correct about that.
Yeah.
They have offered the world to the family. It's just the family's tired.
Yeah.
You know, and they can't really, no matter how many hours you give, if you can't fill them all and the family's exhausted, there is going to be sometimes where assisted living is the most appropriate place. I'll connect the family with you.
Sure.
But I was just curious because, as like Dee said, we are going to get older members, and then what are our plans for that? And also with the needs assessment, how are we assessing for those needs as they age?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, great point. So that was it. I just wanted to let you guys know that support coordination did start that training, and it started in District West. So support coordinators should start to see a difference in the way the meeting is held mid-month now, because folks have gone through that training. So their next possible meeting, they should be using those new tools. So, and again, it's not about the assessment of services. It's just really talking about the needs and addressing the needs and documenting the needs of the whole person.
And so, Angie, just to be clear, part of that training, they're understanding that that PCSP, it's the foundation of everything. It's just not papers to fill out.
Oh, Lord, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I always used to say in training, it's the user's manual of the person's life. And, you know, if we all could have one to say, this is who I am, and this is how I deserve to be treated, and how, what makes me tick, we would have one, right? So yeah, it's not just paper. I hope that they're, if they don't know that already, that they're really stressing that. Yeah.
Who's next, Michelle?
Let's see. Diane, I know we're running late. Do you have an update this evening?
I just have a quick one. I really don't have much. I know for February, we've entered 799 incidents. Out of those incidents, there were 9 reported deaths. I do know that looking at some of the stats and meetings that we've held, the West members served, we're up to 11,600. We're actually the second largest district. So that's kind of, as we see the growth, it's just definitely interesting to see the West certainly has the geographics to grow even more beyond that. I know you've probably heard about the portal, and just, you know, we are moving towards Access Portal. We've conducted some trainings across with the other districts. So we're doing some hands-on training with the Access Portal system, entering incidents into that. It's definitely different. There are some learnings that we are seeing that, again, we're just trying to go through it. We have not been given an official date of when we will start entering incidents directly into that system. We still are using Focus. I know, like I say, it is, the portal is definitely different. So other than that, we are fully staffed, and I think that's about it. Are there any questions? Yes.
Yeah. Do we have any new oversight coming out of quality? In the media, there's an article about a settlement regarding a DDD member who unfortunately was abused in a group home, and it's come to light that that group home was here in District West. Is there any additional vigilance that is going on here in District West? Because we have the largest number of group homes among your staff, to do your best to make sure that such stuff never happens again. We know it's going to happen, but because it's inevitable, but we hope that it's limited. Is there any extra vigilance that you guys are doing?
You know, that's a good question, Dee. I mean, it's certainly, yeah, quite alarming with that. So I'd have to get back with you on that.
I appreciate it.
But no, that's a good question. I mean, again, yeah, that's a sad situation. So, but I'll get back with you with that.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about the individual situation. We only want to talk
absolutely
about
right. What quality? Correct. Yes.
Who's next, Michelle?
Joan.
Good evening again, everybody. Just want to let you know that. Our team is fully staffed. Our new person is up and running very well. We have no backlog with our incidents, which is wonderful. We are actually going to be helping to redact behavior treatment plans to help out the IOS, the PRC, so that they can get themselves caught up, because we had folk that were helping us with our getting caught up. But everything is running smoothly, and my team's doing a great job.
Joan, when you start helping the PRC,
mm-hmm.
besides redacting HIPAA protected information, are you guys going to be doing any quality checks on the accuracy and the timeliness of those documents?
No. When we're given the treatment plans to redact, we're given a time frame that they need to be completed by, so that they will be ready for the meetings where they'll be going over that for the PRC meeting. But that's it, and that's not something that's in our purview.
Yeah,
I wouldn't expect my staff to know what would be appropriate or inappropriate or what they should be doing. That strictly is the role of the PRC. They're going to be looking at those when they review them at a PRC meeting with the agency, the member, the support coordinator, that whole team.
Yeah.
To determine if something can be approved or not.
Yeah. You know? I could only hope, Joan, because I know your redactors are great. I can only hope.
Yeah.
Who's next, Michelle?
To save time, I'm going to go ahead and put my updates in chat and then send them an email. I don't know if Larry has an update for you this evening. I believe he does.
I do have two quick updates for the committee. One is the Law 2000 training that was sent up to you. Hopefully you received that in your inbox. If you haven't, please let me know. I'm sorry.
Is that tomorrow?
No, this is the open meeting laws training is tomorrow. Okay. That's my second update. that open meeting law training tomorrow at 5:00. If you need an invite or a link to that, please let me know. Shoot me an IM, an email, and I'll be happy to add you to that. But my first update was regarding the Law 2000 training through TreyCorp. That's the annual training that the IOC has to do. So if you haven't received that email from TreyCorp, AZ Learning Center, I believe that's what it's called, please let me know, and I will help you troubleshoot that and get that resolved. And that is it. Any questions?
Thanks for your help, Larry, with the public comment thing.
Of course. Absolutely.
That was tricky.
Yeah, it was a little trickier, for sure. But you did a great job.
We try. Who's next, Michelle? The health plans?
Yes.
Hey, Dawn, do you have anything?
No updates. Thank you.
I do have a question for you, Dawn.
Okay.
I was told by a parent who lives in Buckeye that they don't get to choose between Mercy Care and United Healthcare, that only United Healthcare covers Buckeye. Is that correct for DDD members?
I don't think so, but officially I will take your question back. I think I responded to an email about that already too.
I don't remember sending an email. Maybe somebody else did.
Was it Ann?
I mean, I'm not one of the health plans, but I can say I've talked to Mercy Care and United Healthcare regarding zip codes and some other things. And sorry about my bad dog. It was always told to me that it was statewide.
So I will take the question back. Cynthia's yelling at her dog. I'm sorry, dude.
I appreciate it, Dawn. Just so that we, you know, we just want to make sure that the current information is out there.
Can you check with Anne? Because she sent out an email.
No, that was another matter that she sent you an email about closed networks. So, but
I have a question for Dawn, too.
I heard the limitation regarding Cornville, which is not us, and I heard it regarding Buckeye in the same day. So that's why I'm asking the question, because I thought the plans were statewide, Dawn.
Oh, I know where I heard this before. Okay, so I will take this information back, but let me look real quick while Cynthia is preparing for my next question, because I believe I shot that up to my leadership, and what they said is, if you're asking for that information, it's not a problem. One of the things that we want to do is honor the process with Michelle. Send that to her so that I can officially send it to the network.
Okay.
Thanks, yep. Dee. Go ahead, Cynthia.
So it's a question for you or Mercy Care.
Oh.
But have you, so if a person has been assigned to United or Mercy Care, and the person doesn't initiate a change, is there ever a time that Access will realign a member?
Yes.
Okay. And so are there policies around that? Do you know?
I wouldn't know what the policy is.
I'll go
Christina?
My own way, but I was just curious if you know.
There is a policy, and if you want to or need to transition from one health plan to the next, and it's not during your time, which differs for all techs versus ACC plans, then there's very specific criteria that need to be followed. And then technically, I believe I can pull the policy for you, but I believe it needs to be approved by both medical directors of both plans for the switch to occur.
Okay, first, I would love that policy. You have no idea how much I would love that policy. And second, this member says they were switched without their knowledge. And so that doesn't seem right to me. So I'll follow up. I was just curious if there was ever any realignment because of numbers or something that I was unaware of.
There can be realignment, but that member should have been notified. There shouldn't have been, you know, they normally. So we'll take all this back, too. This is interesting. Okay. Thank you for bringing
it. Thank you. Sorry.
Hey, Wendy, do you have an update?
No. Do you have an update?
Oops. Well, obviously the complaint of the people in Buckeye is that they were told they can't choose Mercy Cares.
That's not accurate.
Same thing with Cornville.
We cover Buckeye and we cover Cornville. I've never been to Cornville, but I hear it's lovely.
It is. It's beautiful.
Yes. It's on my bucket list, believe it or not. But we cover both those.
Do we have, Michelle, what else is on our agenda since I don't have it in front of my face? Are we done?
We are done.
I appreciate everybody's patience. We're 10 minutes over.
Oh,
and Angie's got an update.
One more thing. Sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I forgot to say this in my update, but I wasn't sure if you guys were aware that Sherry Wentz retired last week. Yeah.
Oh my God.
She just decided last minute that she needed to address some health concerns that came her way. So please send her good energy. And if we have, you know, if we ever have any information that we can share as far as how to contact her or whatever, or if you want to, you know, once we have an opportunity to reach out to her and tell her how.
I would appreciate it because our friend Leah Gibbs is still enjoying her retirement and doesn't want to hear from any of us. So I can't blame her. But.
And can you just pass on our love and good wishes?
Yes, absolutely.
To her, because we've worked with her for so forever.
Yeah, it's such a huge loss for the DDD community and for the division, all of us employees who really looked up to her as a mentor. So yeah, we took it pretty hard. So yeah, I will absolutely pass on those well wishes.
I just hope that her personal health is her number one priority.
Yeah.
And I just wish her the best. I mean, as Christina pointed out, I have very good things to say about Sherry Wentz.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever said anything negative about Sherry Wentz in the
There is never anything decades. Negative to say.
No. No, she's one of the best. One of the best. So yeah, but I wanted to share that information with you because I forgot earlier and I knew you guys.
Even though it's a public meeting, I'm still gonna keep her in my prayers and good thoughts. So
please do. That's it.
Okay. It is 8:12 p.m. on March 5th. Our next meeting is the first Monday of April, April 2nd at 6 p.m. Same time, same bat channel, use the same link. Is there anything else before I dismiss us, Michelle, or can I go ahead and dismiss us?
Anybody opposed to adjourning?
No.
We're adjourned. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next
time. Good night, everybody.
Thank you. Good night.
I'll send Michelle my email for the health plans.
Good night.
Thank you.
Bye.